Well, we need something to look forward to.
Yep.
You know, something to, you know, take us out of the slump, look to the future.
Yep.
I thought you were about to go into this. Into
I
your,
can't
this
introduce it myself.
No, we didn't do entertainment entree.
Oh, that's right, we did. Son of a bitch. Why don't you write this f***ing outline?
You've tuned into the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Lee Big.
Aren't you hip to the rap music?
And Michael Costanzo.
The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
Unplanned, unscripted, and slightly unhinged.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Woo! Yeah! How you guys doing?
What's up, everybody?
It's time for this week's episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. Folks, it's our job to give you the most interesting tidbits in the world of sports, entertainment, and odd news, and anything else we feel like talking about. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's right. We bring it to you with our unique sense of humor and wackiness. You never know what you're going to get here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Boy, that is right. You know, we have sports, entertainment, and odd news planned out, but you never know where exactly those paths are going to take us.
That's right. Those paths wind through the woods and over babbling brooks and into deep, dark caves.
Okay, very deep, dark caves.
But then they come out into valleys filled with flowers and sunshine and rainbows.
Aww, yeah. That's so nice.
Deers are frolicking, but then we take a bow and arrow and we kill those deer.
All right. And then we go back into the dungeon?
Oh, baby, you're in trouble. Into the dungeon you go.
There's something wrong with me. I had some coffee. Yeah, I don't normally have coffee, so I might be a little...
Is this what it is?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I love coffee.
I know you love coffee.
I need to have coffee or I can't function.
You were like pressing the Dunkin' Donuts app on my brother like you were a door-to-door salesman desperate for a sale.
Man, in all seriousness, we should be getting paid for this, but I love the Dunkin' Donuts app.
You do.
I think they have a great reward system. No BS. I'm not getting paid. I wish I was getting paid right now.
In coffee.
Yeah.
You will get paid in coffee. You don't even need money, right?
Perfect. I will take free coffee.
There you go. Hit them up, Dunkin' Donuts.
Please. I would love free coffee. But anyway, do that on your own time if you'd like. The Dunkin' Donuts app. We're not getting paid for it, so screw it. We're cutting it off there. That's it.
I like the line that you're drawing. That's it. We only give so much praise on this show. Yes. After that, you got to pay us.
Yeah, all right. We're not free here. No, I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. But anyway, there you go. Well, let's launch right into the introduction. You know, what have we been up to in the last week or so since we've last been on the show? Mike, what have you been up to?
I've been, I'm having a fun time laughing right here, but I watched a really good comedy this weekend. I saw The Martian.
Oh, a great comedy.
I still don't understand how it won the Golden Globe for Best Comedy Motion Picture. But no, seriously, it was a really good movie. Matt Damon did a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's a good movie, but it's not a comedy.
Oh no, it's definitely not a comedy. You were right in what you were saying, how the character uses comedy and sarcasm to sort of cope. That's very true, but it's not a comedy. You know, it's about this person trying to survive on their own. One of the most fascinating aspects for me is watching him solve all these unique problems of being stranded on Mars. Like, how is he going to feed himself? So, you know, he's like MacGyvering, this like, greenhouse type thing. And it's just really interesting. And I don't know if the science is real behind any of this stuff, if any of this stuff is like fact checked or even remotely possible, but it's just really interesting to watch and a great, you know, suspenseful movie.
Maybe that's why it's a comedy. None of the facts were fact checked.
I mean, is that what makes a comedy? I don't know. But, no, it was a really, really good movie. What like top three for me this year, I think.
Well, you mean for 2015?
2015, yeah, not, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I know.
Technically, it came out 2015.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember what year it is. We're in 2016 now, but I'm talking about the 2015 movies.
Damn it. We can't get Dunkin' Donuts for free, and we're still stuck on 2015 movies. What is going on?
I don't know. We got to pull this thing together, Rich.
Yeah, all right.
So that's what I was enjoying this weekend. What have you been up to since we last sat down to record?
Besides all the fun playoff football to watch over the weekend, which I caught every single game this weekend.
They were good. They were pretty good games.
Yeah.
I mean, sloppy teams, but they were pretty interesting.
They were fun to watch. Here's something interesting. I caught HBO catching that they were doing a re-airing of the Godfather saga.
Right.
Which is essentially, but they call it specifically the Godfather saga.
Okay.
And the reason why it's not just the Godfather is because the Godfather saga, quote unquote, cuts and edits deleted scenes into Godfather Part 1 and Part 2 and then reorders it based on a chronological time period, which was really interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, most people have seen Godfather 1. At least I hope they would see Godfather 1 and 2.
Yeah, I don't think we're in spoiler territory.
No. But Godfather 2 has a lot of scenes from Vito Corleone's, you know, rising through the ranks in America when he first comes over.
Yeah.
And so they cut it chronologically so that all that stuff, I guess, happens
right
before.
The beginning is Robert De Niro.
Right.
As opposed to that being saved to the Godfather Part 2.
Right. I've never seen it that way. They aired it. I don't know if I think AMC aired it once. How was it though, recut like that? Do you think
it was interesting?
Which version do you like better? I mean, obviously you like the original better, but
yeah.
But I guess merit wise, which one do you think?
Well, first
works
off,
better.
First off, it was cool to see the deleted scenes,
right?
Because there are a couple of deleted scenes that I thought should have been in the original cut.
Was there anything? Awesome. Was there anything that like changed it? Like changed like your perspective or?
You know what? There in the second Godfather, there's more secondary scenes with Fredo being upset at his brother.
I think that may helped it, but that movie was already so long, though.
I think maybe Coppola thought that he was giving away his hand too early with the surprise that Fredo was the one that betrayed him.
Right.
So maybe that's why a lot of it got cut.
Yeah, because
he didn't want to give away.
Because in the final cut, it's a very nice balance, I think.
Yeah. But with those deleted scenes, you get more of a groundwork as to how upset he was that he never got the chance to be the Don, even though he was older than Mike.
Right, right.
So that was interesting. Yeah.
That does add more to it, but I could see how he might be afraid that would tip his hand.
Right. There's also another deleted scene where it's in the first Godfather. It's in that weird period where Michael is the new Don, but Vito is still alive.
Right.
And Vito is warning him not to be too violent.
Okay.
And Al Pacino is Michael Corleone, says something along the lines of, "You promised peace, I didn't." And that was awesome. That was so badass. I wish that would have stayed in.
It's kind of out of Michael Corleone's character at that point in the story, though, I think.
Maybe. But
it's a totally badass line. I love it. And like, maybe if it was in a different part of the film, like maybe later as he's progressing more and more towards the dark side.
we got the Star Wars, but no, it's not Star Wars.
But it's a badass line, but I don't know maybe if it fits his character right there.
Maybe.
But that's still very interesting. Yeah. It adds a very interesting insight there.
Yeah. So here's my wrap up.
Which version do you think works better?
Well, first off, here's my wrap up. If somehow you've never seen The Godfather, or you know somebody that has never seen The Godfather, they have to see it the original way. They have to see it Part 1 the way it is and Part 2 the way it is with the different intermixing between Vito in Italy and Michael as the new head of the Corleone family. You got to go with the original. But if you love The Godfather saga, or if you love The Godfather stories and you've never seen it like this, go to your HBO Go account and check it out for yourself and see how it looks in the chronological order. It is interesting.
I mean, that's like,
and the deleted scenes.
That's like a 7-hour movie, though.
It is.
When you put it all together.
It is. Just about.
That's insane. But I think it would be a nice day to just sit down and watch that.
Yeah.
With the bad weather.
Right. That's another thing, too. Calling for bad weather this weekend here in the Philadelphia area.
Depending on when you're listening to this, you could already be snowed in.
I got to get the bread and milk. They said snow! I got to get the bread and milk! Oh, my God!
Yeah, you better watch out. The stores are going to be all
I don't think
fresh out.
I don't think we have any bread or milk at all. So we'll probably just starve to death.
Oh, no.
Well, we'll be like Matt Damon and the Martian. We'll have to grow potatoes.
There you go. We're going to have to find out. We're going to have to find out if those methods on the Martian worked.
I'm going to put it to the test. I'll let you know.
Good luck for a comedy. But there you go. Just a brief recap of what we've been up to in the last week or so since we last recorded an episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. But now, without further ado, let's launch into our news topics. The first batch is all sports, so we call it the Sports Sampler.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports, 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 sports.
In your face! Ha ha!
Sports coming at you in your face right now. I did tease football, but I'm going to hold it off for just a short time more.
But it's playoff football.
I know. Bear with me.
Okay. Well,
bear with me.
We'll probably talk about like another good sport like baseball or something, right?
No, not baseball.
Oh god, don't tell me
they're
it's
in
golf.
The off season. No, it's not golf. No.
What could it be then?
We're going to talk just for a brief couple of minutes about tennis. I know.
Tennis. I can count the number of times we've talked about tennis on one hand.
I know. We're in the twilight zone on this one.
Okay.
I mean,
right. In a world of tennis.
No, but where two guys have no idea what they're talking about.
Tennis. What is that? No, but that's the one with the rackets, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I know that much.
You're off to a good start.
What's going on in the world of tennis, though?
A very weird report has published over this past week in the world of tennis. First off, this headline is even just weird. BBC Sports and BuzzFeed. Yeah, right there, this is weird.
I don't know. That doesn't feel like it should go together in the same sentence. It's like I had a peanut butter and anchovy sandwich.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. BBC Sports and BuzzFeed have published a report that alleges that there is a major scandal in the world of tennis in terms of fixing matches and ranks. And this is bad timing, too, because this weekend is actually the first major for the tennis world, the Australian Open.
Ooh, that's really bad timing for them then.
Yeah.
So when you say they're fixing matches and ranks, or they say that allegedly this is happening.
Yeah.
Right? So what does that entail? Like changing certain tennis players' ranks so that they get matchups against other specific players?
Yes. And particularly more into like the quarterfinals and the semifinals of these brackets.
Okay.
So that gamblers that are on the inside know which way to bet in these certain rounds.
Okay.
Wow. So it's a...
But tennis players aren't throwing these matches though, are they?
That's also part of the report. There is allegations that matches have been being thrown.
So this is like a sport-wide thing then.
Because yeah. This
isn't like one rogue guy and a tennis player. This sounds like it's like pretty big then, if it ends up being true.
Right. And that's why I thought this was noteworthy to bring it up in the podcast, because if this does reach the worst possible conclusion, this is a pretty big scandal that tennis is going to have to face.
Yeah.
And I mean, tennis isn't exactly already on the best, you know, terms in the sports world. I mean,
what did tennis do?
I mean, we only really watched tennis for like Wimbledon.
Oh,
you know?
Oh yeah.
There really isn't anything else that we are compelled to watch when it comes to tennis, you know?
That's very true. That's true.
To give you an idea, eight of the players, according to the report, eight of the players that are playing right now in the Australian Open have been linked to this report.
That's a lot of
players. Yeah, we're not talking about one or two guys. This is eight.
That's quite a few tennis players.
Yep. I'm going to play just a couple of quick clips here.
Okay.
The first one is a quote from Mark Phillips, who was a betting analyst who helped on this investigation, and just briefly comments about what kind of evidence was gathered by BBC and BuzzFeed in this report. Check it out.
It wasn't just about betting analysis. Obviously, there was lots of other data analysed, phone records, computer records, and so on. But the data analysts and investigators had linked players with the gamblers, and that was one of the reasons why, you know, we believe this evidence was so strong, because that's part of one of the major parts of the investigation is not just seeing the betting patterns, but obviously then linking the people placing the bets to the players or the players' entourage.
Really quick quote there. It's key to establish that BBC is insisting that this is a system going on.
Right.
not
that these people are linked with the players.
Yeah, and their entourages and,
right,
you know, their advisors and stuff like this.
So, yeah, like I said, it's not just like a rogue person or two. This is like an established network.
Right, and I mean, like I said before, if the worst case scenario comes
this
true,
this could really ruin, because then you're like, okay, so how good is Serena Williams?
Yeah. How
because
good is anybody?
I mean, isn't it strange that she's won so
right
much so many times? And then it's like, if it finds out that a lot of, if they're fixing the rankings, has she been getting favorable rankings? If they're fixing matches, are they trying to promote a story?
Yeah.
I don't want to think that, because I don't like to think the worst of people, but it would be a really big blow to the sport.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, if the path continues down and more evidence comes out and there's no rebuttal from the ATP or anything from them, it's going to look damning.
Yeah. So you said you have more quotes. What else are they? What else are they saying?
Here's a brief response by ATP, which is the Association of Tennis Professionals. That's okay. Like the governing body of tennis.
Okay.
So that would be the NFL.
So they are aware that this alleged, that these allegations are flying their way.
Yep. This is the president, Chris Kernode, his response to the BBC in a quick little press conference before the Australian Open this weekend.
Yeah, well, that is simply not true that we're sitting on evidence. What happens is information and intelligence are given to the Tennis Integrity Unit, and they then have to turn that into evidence. And there's a big difference here between information and intelligence as to evidence. And so every single bit of information that the Tennis Integrity Unit receives is investigated properly. When an investigation happens, like any criminal investigation, they are not made public for a variety of legal reasons, but they will be investigated. And that's the misconception here, that information is given and therefore when something doesn't happen immediately, it's assuming that nothing has happened. But I can assure you, on behalf of tennis, all the governing bodies in tennis, it is their sole interest to be on top of this, and the integrity of the game is paramount for our business.
All right, so there you go. The ATP trying to at least block some of the damnations coming down.
The thing that stuck out to me as a casual observer, very vague wording. What did he say? Not all information is intelligence or something like that?
Yeah, he said information is not intelligence.
And I mean, obviously, if this is as big a system as BBC and BuzzFeed are suggesting, why would the investigative branch of the ATP want to pass along this intelligence to the higher ups? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any
threat to the sport should be looked into substantially.
Yeah. I feel like that's very like PR type stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything in that statement was very PR. That was literally just stop the bleeding of this report.
Yeah. Put a piece of gauze over the bullet wound.
Yeah, at least for right now, before you head into the Australian Open.
But I think that wording is just very strange. And I can't remember. All information is not intelligence,
yeah,
or something like that.
Along that. Yeah, something along those lines.
It's
just
very vague and very almost like plausible deniability.
Yeah,
like,
a little bit.
Like
it's
about to hit the fan, and he's like, well, you know, maybe we missed this. Yeah, I feel like if something happens, they're setting up the groundwork to have plausible deniability. Is that just me, or did
no,
it strike?
I agree with you. That's why I thought this was a very important issue to bring up here in the Sports Sampler, even though we're going to get into football in just a couple, just a second or two. I mean, if this report is 2/3 accurate, let's say 2/3 of the thing in this report by the BBC Sports and BuzzFeed is correct, that's really going to damage the integrity of the sport.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could...
Yeah, you're right.
Could.
It doesn't even all need to be true, even if a portion of it is true.
Yeah, it could lead to a big scandal here in 2016.
Yeah. Okay.
But I just wanted to get that out there, wanted to alert you guys, keep you abreast over some pretty crazy
allegations. That's actually pretty interesting. And it's setting up, like, a really interesting narrative You know, like if it wasn't tennis, if this were like another organization, this would be like movie worthy narrative material.
If this was in basketball, you would hear nonstop about this on ESPN.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and of course if it was football. Oh my god. That would be, the president would be talking about it.
Yeah, they would have like a special like second State of the Union.
Yeah.
State of the NFL.
State of the NFL. Roger Goodell's giving the speech. But nevertheless, still a pretty big scandal in the tennis world. Keep an eye on it. There might be when there's smoke, there's fire. There might be some significant fire.
That's right.
In the ATP community. All right, but now I know that was a little bit torturesome for you, Mike, because
I found that really interesting to be honest.
Awesome. Well, I know you've been aching to get the football, so let's go to it. It's finally time for some football news.
It's motherfucking goddamn sons of bitch and fucking football.
All right. Eagles have made some news.
That's right.
They finally found a new head coach?
Yep, that's right. I mean, this is huge news for Eagles Nation. They finally announced that Kansas City offensive coordinator Doug Peterson will become the new Eagles head coach.
Yeah, we kind of knew about this earlier last week, but they couldn't make it official because the Chiefs were still in the
Chiefs
playoffs.
Chiefs were still in the playoffs, and, you know, there's always, you know, everybody's always blowing smoke. Well, you know, he's a highly sought after candidate for the Eagles, but, you know, now it's official. It's done. He's the new head coach. But with this announcement has come a lot of sort of disappointment and harumphing in the Eagles fan base. So I want to know, Rich, let's just cut right to the chase. What do you think of the Doug Peterson hiring? Do you like him as a head coach?
I think this is obviously a plan B choice.
This is
obvious. The Eagles did not get the man that they really wanted right off the top of the bat.
Everybody was saying Adam Gase.
Yeah.
The Bears offensive coordinator.
He ended up going to Miami.
Yeah.
I think you could have done worse than Doug Peterson.
Really?
But yeah,
it's
tough to get excited about this.
It really is. I think ESPN or some,
it was ESPN.
Rated it the worst coaching hire in ESPN the NFL. You know, I don't know how to feel about it because I'm split here. He comes from Andy Reid's coaching staff. Andy Reid has been known to churn out good head coaches and good coordinators for other teams. You cannot deny that. You got Jim Harbaugh. You have Sean McDermott.
Brad Childress.
You have Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, there's a lot of great coaches. Todd Bowles. A lot of great coaches have come up under Andy Reid's system. That being said, Doug Peterson doesn't have a lot of experience, right? So he was offensive quality control and quarterbacks coach with Reid in Philly for about 4 years. Then he went with Andy Reid to Kansas City, became the offensive coordinator, led that offense through some shaky years, but, you know, enough to get them to the playoffs twice, I think.
Yep, and including part of the amazing 11-game winning streak that the Chiefs were on this year.
Yeah, but so here's my thing. Is that Doug Peterson or is that Andy Reid? Because Andy Reid is usually, we know from 14 years of the guy, he's really the offensive guy there on the sideline.
Yes.
It's impossible to know what the percentage is.
Right.
You know, was it like 80% Reid and 20% Peterson?
But you know, this is going to be one of those situations where they're not going to find out his mettle until the season starts next year.
And probably not even until the end of the season.
I'd say within the first six games, I think six games, you're going to find out what kind of head coach he is.
I don't know. See, because, I mean, you say that, but then again, Chip Kelly sort of wore that disguise for quite some time here in Philly.
Yeah, he was able to pull it off longer.
So I don't know. I think, depending on how badly it goes, because I'm anticipating it to not be a smooth ride.
I think we should
find out pretty quickly.
The first six games of the 2016 season are going to be indicative of what the Eagles do for the next 2 to 3 years.
That's a bold statement right there.
I think if the Eagles go, best case scenario, they go like 3-3 and they contend in the division, then you're going to see confidence in Doug Peterson and you're going to see the Eagles play moderately to conservative. They're going to want to maintain that balance, maintain being able to stay in the hunt. If the Eagles go 0-6 those first six games,
oh, things are going to get desperate.
It's going to get desperate and it's going to get ugly fast. You're going to turn the Eagles are going to turn into the Sixers, and that's going to be ugly.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely don't want that.
Yeah, I think that's the. I think honestly, that's the range of outcomes we're going to get here. You're either going to get 0-6 Oh my God, panic button. World's on fire. Pants are on fire. Get rid of everybody. Oh my God. Let's just shoot for the number one spot in the draft. Let's go for the worst record. Or I'd say around like 3-3 to start off the season. You contend. Okay. Peterson gets a shot at this season, next season, and so on.
Yeah. So you're saying their potential ceiling is like around 500.
Yeah. 4-2 I can't see him going.
I mean, for the whole first season though, you're predicting their ceiling to be like 8-8, 9-7
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair for a first-time head coach.
First-time head coach.
I mean, he could shock us. I highly doubt it.
I highly doubt that.
Because he doesn't strike me as a real, like, you know, you look at some coaches and you're like, man, they got a lot of fire. They're real smart, intense guys. He doesn't strike me as that type of person.
No.
He's worked under a lot of great coaches. But
I'll tell you what, this is the one, it's kind of a drawback, but it's also somewhat of an advantage coming into the Eagles organization right now. Doug Peterson had a really great core of running backs, but not really a stellar quarterback.
Right.
He's kind of going into the same situation with the Eagles. He's got DeMarco Murray. He's got Ryan Matthews, a great running back core, but not really that.
Well, how many of them will be around, though, next year?
I think the one that's going to get cut is going to be Darren Sproles, which makes me sad.
I think Darren Sproles is going to be gone, too.
Yeah. I really like him, too.
I think DeMarco Murray will definitely be here because...
Oh, yeah. He's too expensive to get rid of.
Not only that, but if we change up the system, he could be a really good back for us.
Yeah. And I think that's where Doug Peterson could succeed really well.
Yeah.
Using that star running back power, maybe retooling the offensive line.
Well, that's a given.
I think it's not impossible. I'd say it's a very good possibility.
We need a reliable deep threat, and we need at least two offensive linemen.
Yeah.
I think everything else we can get by with.
At least to maintain competitiveness.
Yeah, at least to stay competitive while we build up those positions.
Right. I'm not saying we're going to go 5-1 or something crazy.
No.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are some positive signs here. Doug Peterson has played under or worked with great coaches in the past, Don Shula, Andy Reid, Mike Holmgren. There's also a rumor brewing that the Eagles could be bringing in Jim Schwartz as defensive coordinator.
And may the Schwartz be with you.
I knew that you were going to pull a clip from Spaceballs. Yep. Come on.
If you know what? I just want George to join the union just so I can have this sound clip on like speed dial, you know?
And may the Schwartz be with you.
You gotta love it.
Yep.
But speaking of loving the Schwartz, I like this move. If the rumors turn out to be true,
he's a pretty good defensive coordinator.
He is a good defensive coordinator. He has a lot of experience. So I think this changes the Doug Peterson thing. So if Doug Peterson comes in, they don't get a very good defensive coordinator. We're looking at, you know, a rough first year. If he comes in, they get a good defensive coordinator like Jim Schwartz. I think that changes the perspective a little bit because Jim Schwartz has a lot of experience. 4 years as a positions coach, 5 as a head coach, 9 years as a defensive coordinator. His 3 most recent jobs as defensive coordinator, his defense was ranked 5th, 7th, and 9th in the league. I mean, I'll take a top 10 defense.
Sure.
You're like, sure, yeah. Sure,
that'd be nice.
That's if the rumor proves to be true. And a lot of signs are pointing to it being true, but, you know, you never know. Last-minute issues might pop up. So, yeah, I mean, overall, my attitude towards this whole coaching move is meh.
Yeah, it's meh.
It's the safe, conservative choice. It's Andy Reid 2.1, you know?
2.1?
2.1.
What makes it 2.1?
Because Chip Kelly was Andy Reid 2.0. because he had horrible time management. He
you are right about that.
He was a big guy. He was like kind of lost.
Wouldn't
at times.
Wouldn't it be 3.0?
Maybe. Well, I mean, Doug Peterson isn't really a full system upgrade from Chip Kelly. So
he's a
point.
Patch.
He's a, yeah, he's a patch. I mean, really, wouldn't that be how you would describe him?
Yep.
He's Doug, was Doug Peterson your first choice?
No.
Was he
not.
Your second?
No.
Was he your third?
Oh, yeah, he's 2.1.
He's 2.1.
2.11.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean. That's the general attitude is that, you know, he's not really that big of an upgrade, but it's not like he's a downgrade either, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, 2.11. If he gets Jim Schwartz, maybe he's like 2.2, you know, something like that. We'll see.
All right, well,
what would you rate him on a scale of operating system updates?
2.4.
2.4? Wow. Oh, man.
I don't know.
All right.
All right. Well,
the most nonsensical scale ever.
Yeah.
I want to do all of our ratings based on operating OS upgrades.
All right. Well, we might not know a lot about OS upgrades, but there is one thing we do know, and that is we like to do predictions for next week's games of the football season, but we're done the Fantastic Four. There's no four games left. It's down to the conference championship games. So it's time to present in super dramatic fashion. This is what I've been building up to the last couple of weeks.
I know. I'm like getting tense waiting for this.
It's time for our conference championship choices. And yes, the dramatic music.
I don't know if I can present these teams with this type of pressure, Rich.
Yep. Slowly but surely, I've made the music more dramatic as we've gone, and now we've hit championship level. These games are for the right to play in Super Bowl 50. The pressure's on.
I'll tell you, man, when they made Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, they knew exactly like the right sounds to get your psyche like completely out of whack, because it just tenses you up.
All right. Well, know? I hope you're not too tense, because we got to launch into these matches.
I'm not too tense. But you know who might be tense? Is Tom Brady and Peyton Manning as they face off for possibly the final Brady Manning Bowl. Brady Manning Bowl 17.
Yep.
What a history between these two quarterbacks in the AFC as the second seed New England Patriots travel to the first seed Denver Broncos. It's a 3:00 game, Sunday, January 24th. Rich, what is your final answer?
All right. Well, the Broncos, you know, they weren't playing as top tier as they should have been going up against the Steelers. But in the end, they were able to put together a last minute drive in the fourth quarter, enough to pass by in the division round. Peyton Manning looked all right. But I don't think he's
banged up Steelers team.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
All. That's all. Like that. That's the thing that sticks in my mind. Banged up Steelers team.
If
you have the top defense and you still barely manage to squeak by. I'm sorry, I stole your thunder.
If, if the Steelers had a healthy roster and had Antonio Brown, I think they would have won that game. I think they would have knocked the Broncos out. And you know what, Peyton Manning, even though he's the established veteran, I still don't trust him in the playoffs. I still think at least a part of me believes that he's going to choke at some point in this AFC Championship game. On the other hand, the Patriots, they easily took care of the Chiefs.
There's no panic.
Yeah, there's really no panic. Until somebody stops Gronk, I don't see the Patriots slowing down. I think Tom Brady takes this one and goes back for his, seventh AFC championship?
Yeah.
Ridiculous. I think it happens. I'm going with the Patriots. What do you say, Mike?
Yeah, I agree on all points. Peyton Manning looks sloppy. That team looks sloppy. You know, I'm just watching the way the ball comes out of his hand. He does not have any power on those throws. They come out, they wobble. They come out, they float. All the Patriots need to do is get a little bit of pressure in his face. You know, I hate to throw this card around, but he's getting up there in age. I don't think he ever really recovered from that injury. And I think that the Broncos peaked way too early. I think the Patriots, you know, I keep going back to this, but they're so experienced in this type of thing. They've been to the Super Bowl 6 times. in 14 years.
Yep.
That is an absurd amount of times to go to the Super Bowl in 14 years.
Yep, yep.
Going on the road, you know, they're going to have something to prove. And not to mention, Brady always, as far as I can remember, had the upper hand against Manning.
I don't remember Brady ever having a bad game in
the
playoffs.
He never really struggled against Manning. With the Colts, with the Broncos, doesn't matter. I mean, he obviously lost a few. But I don't think this is going to be one of them. I think the Patriots are going to go to their seventh Super Bowl in 14, 15 years.
Wow. All right, yeah. So we're in agreement on that one, the number two seed in that one.
All right, so the number two seed won in the first game according to our picks. But who will win in the NFC matchup? We have the two best teams, arguably, in the entire NFL.
Yeah, I'm going to spoil this. I think this is the real Super Bowl.
This is the real Super Bowl. The AFC matchup, I don't see the Broncos really competing, but this game, this is going to be really tough. I'm talking, of course, about the two-seed Arizona Cardinals traveling to Carolina to face off against the 15-1 best team in the NFL, the Carolina Panthers. It's a 6:40 game. I love the odd times also for the games in this round of the playoffs. But, Rich, what do you feel like in this Super Bowl, not Super Bowl, conference championship?
This one actually tears me apart a little bit.
This is a really tough one.
Personally, I would really love to see the Arizona Cardinals go back to the Super Bowl. Carson Palmer leading that team, having one of the best comebacks ever a NFL quarterback has ever had in this league. That would be a great storyline for this organization and for the NFL. But, I mean, last week they just looked so stiff going up against the Packers, and they almost blew it, too.
They did. It was a really shaky game.
Yeah. That kind of shook my confidence in that defense. The Cardinals were actually having one of the best defensive seasons that I can remember off of an NFC team in quite a while. On the other hand, Carolina easily took care of Seattle, and I mean easily took care of Seattle.
Okay.
In that first half. Look,
In the first half.
I love this. Yeah, should we get into this?
Okay.
All
what
right.
about it?
They were up 31-0.
They were up 31-0.
You play soft. That's what happened.
But even if you play soft, Carolina did nothing in the second half.
Right.
And
they didn't need to.
For worry. They're cocky. They take pictures at the 2-minute warning. They're laughing at the sideline as the Seahawks are screaming down the field, scoring 24 unanswered points. I really feel like they peaked too early. I know they pulled that one off against the Seahawks.
Are we going to disagree on this?
We're going to definitely disagree on this one.
I'm going with Carolina.
Okay. I'm going with the Cardinals. I feel like they got those jitters out of their system, hopefully. Here's the thing. The Cardinals do not commit turnovers. When they commit turnovers, it is a rarity. The only losses that they had are the losses where they had turnovers, and they were able to survive the Packers' onslaught. I feel like they're probably going to be a little looser now. You know, they're going to go into Carolina. They're going to, you know, have a little bit of confidence with them. Carolina, on the other hand, they got shaken up pretty bad in that second half. You know, the pressure – you have to ask yourself, who's the pressure on? The pressure's not on the Cardinals. The pressure's on Carolina. Home crowd team, 15-1. We've seen number one seeds fall like this before. Does Cam Newton have the mettle, as young as he is, with as little playoff experience as he have? That whole team is really young.
It is.
I in these situations, I lean towards the veterans, Larry Fitzgerald, Carson Palmer, this team that has been top of the league in almost every category. I'm going to take a risk on the two-seed Cardinals. And it is a risk because it's going to be a very close game.
I would counter that by saying that Cam Newton's having probably the best career year that any quarterback has had in the last 10 years.
I saw a weird stat, though, that said that the MVP quarterback of the season hasn't won a Super Bowl in a really long time.
Well, I mean, I think that could break because Cam Newton has so many weapons at his disposal. Stewart has been a beast running the ball. Even his receiving core is stepping up. And that defense is just nasty.
I
love how that defense plays when they're up to snuff. That first half, I've never seen just an utter obliteration of an offense, especially one that was a pretty high caliber offense.
But why didn't they continue in the second half?
Don't forget, the last six games that the Seahawks played of the regular season, Russell Wilson was like airing it out. Like, he was throwing four or five touchdowns a game.
He was.
What happened to that guy? He was gone in that first half of that game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not disputing these facts. I just think that second half was very telling for both teams. I think the Cardinals, they proved that they have, even if they're down in the dumps, they can bring it back at the last moment. The Panthers, they went up 31-0. How many times have we seen teams go up and just slip slide away at the end? I think it says something about their overconfidence. Cam Newton was like laughing and joking on the sideline as the Seahawks are staging a potential game-ruining comeback. And they were an onside kick away from sending that into overtime. It's just, for me, that's a little... If the Eagles did that, we'd be screaming about them. We'd be screaming. I'd be like, I would have lost half my hair by now. I don't know. This is going to be a great matchup.
Okay. But in the end, we're actually going different on this one.
We got to change it up somehow.
We both agree on the Patriots, but for the NFC showdown, which is supposed to be, I think this is going to be the highlight of the weekend.
This is the real Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it's the real Super Bowl, the highlight of the weekend. I'm going with Carolina.
I'm going with the Cardinals.
Mike's going with the Cardinals, and I think it's safe to say that those are our final answers here in our conference championship choices. This is the last predictions we make until the Super Bowl. So there you go, folks. Take it to the bank. Those are our predictions for the conference championship weekend.
Music is so stressful.
It is a little bit.
It just puts me on edge, makes me tense. It's like, because I said this last week, like normally the music's upbeat and I'm like, yeah, this team's going to that team.
Yeah, the season prediction music is more upbeat. Yeah.
Yeah. But the past couple weeks, it's always been like,
it's getting worse and it's so dramatic.
It's like, oh, this team, can they win against this team? Before it's all airy and bubbly, and now it's like, oh, like
pressure's on.
Murder and shadows and.
That's the playoffs for you.
Who wants to be a millionaire music?
You gotta love it. One more quick fact before we end the sports sampler.
Okay.
Just a fun fact to throw out there. In the AFC.
Yeah.
The last 12 out of 13 AFC winners.
Right.
Were always led by either Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, or Ben Roethlisberger. 12 out of 13.
Who was Joe Flacco?
Yep, there you go. Wow. You got it. Oh, I was wondering if you'd get it.
Because I'm thinking, yeah, what other teams have won or been in the Super Bowl other than those three quarterbacks?
Nice.
Just Joe Flacco, yeah.
Yep, but there you go. In the last 13 seasons, 12 of the AFC champions were led by Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Ben Roethlisberger.
I can't even think of another. Yeah.
That's it. Yep.
That's insane. You know what, though, and my dad says this all the time, but like 20, 30 years from now, we're going to sit back and say that... This was a golden era. And not only was it a golden era, but forget all the quarterback legends of past. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning will go down as the two best quarterbacks in NFL history, mark my words. Yeah. I don't think we'll ever see a duo like them again.
No, I don't think so either. But there you go. A lot of stories to get to in the sports sampler. Hope you're not too full because we still got more show coming up. We'll have the entertainment entree, talk about a couple of things there. We'll have Mike's This Week in Entertainment. And then after that, I've got a new batch of odd news for you with the non-fortune cookie odd news. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Crispy Noodle Podcast. Did you hear this?
A man in Missouri was banned from passing go or collecting $200 when he actually started a fight at a Monopoly tournament and police sent him directly to jail. 69-year-old John Linton turned violent when he was asked to sit out from this year's tournament after he engaged in, quote, unsportsmanlike conduct.
Was he trying to steal money from the bank?
Probably, yeah.
There's always one person.
Yeah, always takes that extra $500 from the bank.
Yeah. You really want to drive people crazy? Have you ever played Cutthroat Monopoly?
What's the difference?
We would take all the property cards and deal them out at the start of the game so that everyone had at least one full set of colors so you could start building hotels on, like, your first or second turn. People were literally going bankrupt on, like, the fourth or fifth turn. It would just break hearts and destroy friendships. It was a horrible, horrible experience. I have serious PTSD from, like...
Yeah, you sound like those history documentaries, you know? I remember back in 1910, during the height of the Monopoly era...
We gathered around the Monopoly board. We didn't know what we were getting into.
We heard of this cutthroat Monopoly. We never heard of this before.
We decided it could be nothing but a little bit of fun.
I wrote a letter to my fair Virginia. Dear Virginia.
Dear Virginia.
I've gone penniless here on Park Place.
If you do not hear from me, it means I've ventured past Boardwalk. I shall not return. Please know, I will always remember our time at the Waterworks. Love, your one and only Mr. Moneybags. I mean, sometimes when you play Monopoly, you do feel like that. You feel like you've hit a point where you're like, I can never be sane again.
I can't manage my own finances in the real world or in the fake Monopoly world.
Yeah, really? It's just like rubbing salt in the wound. That's like, it should be in the rules at this point. It's like the first person to knock somebody out.
Gets to sucker punch somebody.
Gets to sucker punch somebody.
Check out thecrispynoodle.com.
This is Guardian Shield, and you are listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Oh, yeah, coming back here in the entertainment entree, playing a little bit of the Eagles in honor. Yeah, go ahead, Mike. You want to sing a little bit?
That's all I know.
Honoring the Eagles a little bit. Unfortunately, got some more sad news in the rock community. I don't know what is going on in the rock world.
It's been a bad couple of weeks for that.
Death must have a rock playlist going on. But unfortunately, Glenn Frey, one of the big founding members of the Eagles, passes away at 67. I mean, it's just
one after another after another.
It is. Glenn Frey, he did vocals, guitars, harmonica, keyboards, almost a do-it-all musician for the Eagles. So a big blow, in the rock scene, with the announcement of his death.
And you're playing this because he wrote this one, right?
Yeah, he actually wrote this one, yeah. So I thought this one was a good one to play instead of like Hotel California.
Everybody knows Hotel California.
Yeah, right. So I figured a little off the beaten path, take it easy, why not? But yeah, sucks to hear that another rock legend passes away in his late 60s too. That's another thing too. It's been...
Well, yeah, because, what's his face? Lemmy and David Bowie both died at 69.
Right.
And now, Glenn Frey at 67.
Yeah. And then not saying that he wasn't this old, but also going back to November of 2015, Scott Weiland died.
That's right.
Yeah. It's just been like one after another.
The past couple of months. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you said last week that, they're forming a super group up in heaven.
Yeah. That's what I'm starting to think. Between David Bowie, Lemmy from Motorhead. Frey from the Eagles and Scott Weiland. Yeah.
Are there any other musicians around the late 60s? Because who knows could be next.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like really, I shouldn't joke about that, but it's just been really shocking and sad the past couple weeks.
Yeah. A lot of my favorite rockers too. I mean, David Bowie and Scott Weiland and Lemmy.
Yeah.
They were some of my favorite rock acts.
Yeah. David Bowie especially, but, you know, Glenn Frey, the Eagles. You gotta love some good Eagles tunes.
Yeah.
I like Journey of the Sorcerer.
Oh yeah, that's a great instrumental one.
I know it's an instrumental one. I don't know if many people know it, but I'm a fan of that one.
Yep. Used it in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah. That's an interesting movie. Better book. Interesting movie though.
Yep.
But yeah, so listen to some of the Eagles to commemorate this passing.
Unfortunately, we go from one death to another from the music world. Now we got to go to the acting world. Another big loss.
Yeah, this one was really shocking.
Because yeah.
This was one of my favorite actors in recent times. Alan Rickman, a famous British actor, who's obviously very well known for playing Hans Gruber in Die Hard, and of course Professor Severus Snape in the Harry Potter series. He recently passed away at the age of 69 from cancer. Again, another one from cancer. So, and another one in the late 60s.
Yeah, 69.
Yeah, I mean, we're losing a lot of very influential artists the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
And Alan Rickman was definitely a big one. I mean, when you think, I don't want to paint him as a quote unquote bad guy, but he always played these sort of, you know, bad guy roles, didn't he? Hans Gruber, of course, and Snape, another one. So much to
Love
the point.
Actually is kind of like in the middle, because he plays a guy that's cheating on his wife. And you're not really supposed to be rooting for him.
No, he always plays these roles where, you know, you're not really rooting for him. That's a good way to put it. But he has a quote regarding this, because I guess so many people associate him with playing villains. He famously said, "I don't play villains. I play very interesting people."
That's a good way to look at it.
It is a good way to look at it. I mean, two of my favorite series of all time, Die Hard and Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I mean, he made those movies. I mean, that first movie, I mean,
Bruce
Willis was good, but come on.
Hans Gruber is
he made
the
that
reason
movie.
Why John McClane is so legendary in that movie.
Yeah. If they had anybody else play that role of Hans Gruber, I don't know if it does that well.
No.
I can't tell you who the baddie from number two is. Number three, I know it's Hans Gruber's brother.
Yeah.
Four and five are like, do they even have bad guys? I don't even know. Hans Gruber is the only one. Can you name any of the others? You can't. I guarantee you. I'll put a dollar on that you can't name another one without looking it up.
Yeah, the second one is the second one is
random Russian guy.
The second one is some terrorist who hijacks airplanes.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a name or a personality.
Not
that's the problem.
Other than the fact that he's just super cold and likes being cold. But that's really,
he's super cold and likes being cold. So we have Hans Gruber, cold guy,
yeah.
Hans Gruber's brother, and not Hans Gruber, Hans Gruber 2. Those are the five villains in Die Hard.
But yeah, and really that's just more of a shadow of being Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
The fourth one is some technological dude.
Again, not threatening at all.
And the fifth one is some Russian guy.
Yeah. I mean, Hans Gruber made that series.
Yeah, he made the first one.
Yeah. And I would argue without that first one being so popular, you don't have the other four, five, whatever, however many movies came out after that.
Yeah.
And then Harry Potter, of course, for those people that are Harry Potter fans, Severus Snape is one of the most popular characters for good reason. Because, you know, he starts out as a bad guy and, spoiler alert, ends up being not so bad in the end. Probably has one of the most heartbreaking character arcs that I've ever read.
Yeah.
Or watched.
Yep. Yeah, it just sucks.
It really does.
To hear of really his does. I also liked them in Galaxy Quest.
That's right, he did. Movie. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of the, in tribute to, and they have the Galaxy Quest
by
clips.
By Graptar's hammer, who shall be avenged.
Oh, man. I mean, such a corny line, but so many great roles.
By Graptar's hammer, is a good deal, or whatever the hell his commercial was in that movie.
Oh, I mean, yeah, this is a big loss,
yeah.
I think, in the world of movies.
Yep. One more thing before we leave this topic.
Okay.
One of my favorite roles that he was in was Kevin Smith's Dogma. He was Megatron, the voice of God.
He was the voice of God? Oh, that's perfect.
Yep.
That's perfect.
But in the movie, they get to a point where they run out of ideas to help save the heroes. And this is the only thing that Alan Rickman can say in the middle of their troubles.
So what are we going to do now?
Well, I say we get drunk because I'm all out of ideas.
Yep. Thank you. There you go. So, yep. If I'm out of ideas, I say screw it. Let's
just
follow Alan Rickman. Let's get drunk. There you
go. Perfect. Perfect. Oh, my gosh. So... yeah, Alan Rickman, very sad loss for the film community and for fans of film, and just a sad loss in general. One more quote real quick, because this one I think really puts a nice little capstone on it. He said, quote, if only life could be a little more tender and art a little more robust. I love that quote. That's my favorite.
All right. Well, there you go. Alan Rickman. It's very sad to hear that he's passed away from cancer at the age of 69.
So after all these sad deaths, we need something to look forward to. We need something uplifting. We need to look to the future, specifically to the future of entertaining things that are coming out. So that brings us to the main course of our meal for your mind with the entertainment entree.
And now, the latest in movies.
Guy writes to movies. Dear Die Hard, you rock. Especially when that guy was on the roof.
Music.
I know what that is. That's music.
Video games.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite store on the Citadel.
Celebrities.
You really know Warren Beatty?
Yes, I do. I took a leak next to him once at the Golden Globes.
And more.
You were the all-singing, all-dancing crap of the world.
This is the entertainment entree.
Ah, one tube of sunblock. That will be $30. Once again, keeping the bald man down. I do have a Philadelphia 76ers hat that you could wear for free. I'll pay. I'll pay.
Is that The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Yes.
The Simpsons on Sunday took a dig at the 76ers, saying that it would be painful for a bald man to wear the 76ers hat.
It would be.
Rather than pay $30 for sunscreen.
One tube of sunblock. That will be $30. Once again, keeping the bald man down. I do have a Philadelphia 76ers hat that you could wear for free. I'll pay! I'll pay!
Yep.
That you could wear for free.
Oh, God, I'll pay.
I'll pay.
Oh, God.
That's like one of those classic switcheroos. I always think of the one with Homer where he's eating the...
I know.
The kebabs. I can't remember what he's eating.
In
New York City. He's eating some type of food, and he eats a lot of these kebabs.
Yep.
And he gets thirsty, and the guy goes, oh, we have Mountain Dew or crab juice. Oh, God. Oh, that's disgusting. I'll have the crab juice.
Yep.
It's one of those classic switcheroos. I love that.
Yep, and featuring our hometown 76ers.
76ers, just poking fun.
That's how bad the Sixers have gotten. They've now made their way into a Simpsons episode.
I'd say, you know, quit beating the dead horse, but, I mean, at this point, you're not really beating the dead horse. You're kind of beating the mound of dirt that's already been piled on top of it. Yeah, the 76ers are bad.
Yeah, so there you go. I had to play that clip when I saw that on Sunday. All right, but now let's launch into one of our featured segments of the Entertainment Entree. It's time for Mike's This Week in Entertainment.
You're the man now, dog.
Yeah, Mike's the man now, dog.
Thank you, thank you.
He works so hard to get this segment right for This Week in Entertainment. I just wanted to bring it to his attention. Mike, you are the man now.
You're the man now, dog.
Thank you, thank you. That makes me feel good.
There you go.
But the first movie that I'm going to be talking about has nothing to do with the man. It's actually about The Boy, a new horror film starring Walking Dead star Lauren Cohan. This one sounds kind of creepy. An American nanny is shocked that her new English family's boy is actually a life-size doll. Why? Why would that be a thing? That is so creepy. After violating a list of strict rules, disturbing events make her believe that the doll is really alive. Doesn't that sound really twisted?
Wow.
Why would you have a movie with a life-size doll in it?
Yeah.
That's like the stuff of nightmares right there.
A little bit.
So, if you're into horror, if you want to kick the new year off with a good horror movie, go check out this one. If you're in for something a little more dramatic, maybe something a little sci-fi, maybe you want to check out this one, Synchronicity. It's a sci-fi film noir, drawing some comparisons to Blade Runner for its use of atmosphere. A physicist travels back and forth in time to prevent a seductive woman and a ruthless tycoon from stealing his invention. So, It's kind of, you know, a standard sort of, you know, plot. But I like the vibe that I'm getting from it with, you know, the atmosphere, the film noir atmosphere. Looks like it could be interesting. So check that out this week, Synchronicity. In the world of TV, we have The X-Files returning on Sundays on Fox. This is a big one. I was never a fan of the original X-Files, but I know it's a huge series. It has a lot of
following.
Oh my god, a huge cult following. It's finally coming back to the airwaves. So if you're a fan of the X-Files, make sure to check that one out. But this one's got my interest. Mondays on Sci-Fi, we have The Magicians. Now, maybe some of you have never heard of The Magicians. I recently read the novel written by Lev Grossman, on which this series is based. And the novel series by the same name, The Magicians, is basically summed up as Harry Potter meets The Chronicles of Narnia with sex and drugs.
What about sex and drugs?
I mean, imagine the college version of Harry Potter.
I'm in.
That's exactly what the book is like.
Can you discipline him?
Oh, kinky.
That you would not believe how much of that goes on in this novel.
All right.
So I'm excited to see a mature fantasy. It is fantasy, unfortunately, Rich, but a mature magical fantasy type television series based on this series.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
There's a scene in the book.
Is there sex like that?
There's a scene in the book where they turn into foxes and they get really frisky.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so not beavers.
Super, no, not beavers, but it gets super kinky at some points.
Okay. Yeah.
Can you discipline him?
Oh, kinky.
All right, let's move away from the kink and let's talk about something whimsical and wholehearted. Video games, A Boy and His Blob is coming out on Xbox One, PlayStation 4, PlayStation Vita, and PC. This is an old Nintendo game that was released on the NES, that was remade for the Wii in 2009, and is now getting an HD re-release for current-gen consoles. It features a boy and a transforming blob that you use to solve puzzles. So you feed it a magic jelly bean, and it transforms into ladders and umbrellas and can form a hole in the ground that you can jump through. So it's puzzle platformer. It seems really interesting, you know, kind of cutesy and kid-friendly. So if that's your thing, go check out A Boy and His Blob. If you want something a little more violent, World of Tanks is finally coming to PlayStation 4. There's a free-to-play tank combat game. It's noteworthy for its big battles of two teams of 15 tanks squaring off in a huge map. And this is, you know, it combines RPG elements with upgrading your tanks and buying resources and good old-fashioned vehicle combat by moving in squads and, you know, trying to get the high ground and try to skirt through rubble-ruined towns and hunt down the other tanks in the map. It seems like it's a lot of fun. So go check out World of Tanks on PlayStation 4. And that wraps it up for this week in entertainment.
All right, Mike, thank you for that segment this week in entertainment. Before we completely wrap up the entertainment entree, we have one topic to go over, and it has to do with my Star Wars. So this is
something that's appropriate. Gotta love some Star Wars. Gotta love some Star Wars.
Very appropriate.
why are you very appropriate?
Very appropriate.
Very appropriate.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Good.
I have proclaimed it.
Good form.
It is appropriate. but yes, it does deal with the latest Star Wars movie, Star Wars The Force Awakens, making a big splash at the box office. I think it's the number one grossing movie of all time.
Yep.
Yep. So it's...
Take that.
Did it beat Titanic? Or Avatar? Which was the top one? Avatar?
I think it was... Wasn't it Jurassic World or something? Didn't Jurassic World get up there?
God, that's sad, because that movie was bad.
Oh.
Number two, I mean, I liked it because it's dinosaurs, but it was a bad movie. But I think Star Wars The Force Awakens deserves it. It was an amazing film. A lot of people loved it. A lot of fans loved it. Completely erases the nasty taste of the prequel trilogy.
Yep.
But, as with every good new release in modern entertainment, there's always critics. It seems like you can't have anything nice anymore without people taking a dump all over it. And some people are saying, you know what? This movie was too good. It ripped off Star Wars A New Hope.
There are...
Does that even make sense to you?
There are...
It's like, oh, this was too much like that amazing film that we all loved.
I mean, it's a fair argument because there are a lot of parallels between this and A New Hope, but I think it's supposed to be purposely designed that way to introduce new people to the Star Wars franchise.
Right.
To get the old ones back and excited for this new sequel trilogy.
Right.
So I don't really hold that as much as a gripe against this movie.
So you don't see that as a criticism. You see that more as
a necessity. Almost
a necessity. Well, you know what? It's funny you bring that up because I think that the film's creator, J.J. Abrams, would actually agree with you, Rich. He gave a recent interview in which he addresses some of that criticism, where he talks directly about why they made the choice to mirror those early movies. So I have a little sound clip of a great quote from J.J. Abrams. I'd like to play it for you here to get it in his own words and see what he says about the necessity of, quote-unquote, ripping off Star Wars A New Hope. So let's play the clip.
What was important for me was introducing a brand new chapter, brand new characters, using relationships that were embracing the history that we know to tell a story that is new, to go backwards, to go forwards. And so I understand that this movie, I would argue much more than the ones that follow, needed to take a couple steps backwards into very familiar terrain and using a structure of nobodies becoming somebodies, defeating the baddies, which is, again, I would argue, you know, not a brand new concept, admittedly.
So what did you think about that quote right there, to go backwards, to go forwards? It seems sort of strange to say that, but I think he's got a bit of a point there, and you've hit on it as well.
From a storytelling perspective, that makes complete sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to go back to go forward.
Yeah, you have to honor those, you have to, you know, call on those time-honored traditions and classics so that you have the proper framing and context for this new story.
Yeah. And although, you know, A New Hope, the original Star Wars, although we like to think of it as, you know, something new that came out, you know, when it first was released in theaters, George Lucas called back on major archetypes.
Yeah.
You know, the bad guys wore black. The good guys are the blue and the light colored,
right.
The journey of someone trying to develop into an adult and trying to figure out his place in we would say the world, but in that universe, in that story, in their place in the universe, the conflict between a critic and someone who believes, you know,
yeah.
There are, you know, that's what archetypes are. You call back to the past, something that we're all familiar with.
And I'm glad you brought up that conversation about archetypes, because I'm going to get like really literary on you guys. But there's something called Joseph Campbell's The Monomyth. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that. More commonly referred to as The Hero's Journey. And you can look it up online. And it's literally a series of 12 steps, a secular journey, in which the hero leaves the quote-unquote ordinary world and travels to the quote-unquote new world. Faces his obstacles. There's a gatekeeper. There's a mentor figure. And you look at movies like Star Wars, and it follows all these tropes and archetypes. At the end of the journey, the hero travels back to the old world with the understanding and the talents and skills of the new world, and it changes his worldview. So let's talk about that in terms of Star Wars. Luke is on Tatooine. That's his ordinary world. Humdrum sort of life. He meets the gatekeeper, the mentor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, travels to the new world of the Force, something that he never understood. He faces allies and critics like Han Solo, and he faces enemies like Darth Vader. But with that knowledge, he's able to overcome those obstacles, go back to the ordinary world, but his entire perspective of the universe has changed because of this newfound knowledge he has. That is a classic, time-honored story structure that a lot of people argue is present in almost every single story told. That's why it's called the monomyth, because they argue that's the only story that exists. What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just got really literary and Rich is like completely glazed over.
I understood perfectly because it was a Star Wars reference.
Because it was a Star Wars reference. But here's the crazy thing is that you can even apply that to something like The Godfather. Michael Corleone, he's in the regular world where he's outside the family business. Yep. Then he goes into the new world of being in the family business. He has his mentors, which is like Clemenza, his father, you know, all those characters. And it's this journey. It's a way of summing up that classic character journey, that character arc. But and that's what J.J. Abrams is talking about in a way. That's what you're talking about by calling back on those archetypes.
Yeah. And I think it's necessary for
it is.
The first installment of a sequel trilogy.
Yeah. So let's make it less heady. Let's bring it back to Star Wars. So in terms of the movies, I think we brought this up back when the movie first came out. I had said that the movie needs to do like extra work or double duty in the fact that it needs to entice new fans. It needs to erase the memories of the original or of the prequel trilogy from young fans, and apologize for it for old fans and continue a story that was abandoned 30 years ago. So it had a lot that it needed to accomplish.
Yeah,
as a singular movie.
And I think for the most part, it hit all those notes.
I think it did too. And I think the reason that it did is because it called back to the fourth movie.
Yeah.
You know, it says Star Wars 7, but I don't see it as Star Wars 7. I see it like as Star Wars the reboot.
Almost, yeah.
Because it's so similar. And this is, I'm bordering on it being a critique because it is at sometimes a little overly similar, but I think it does more benefit than harm for the movie. Because yeah. It was easy to get into. It was easy to root for the characters, easy to understand it. And it made it feel like watching the fourth one over again, which is never a bad thing.
No. The only thing I'd say is they probably could have came up with a better name for the Star Killer.
And really, and that was one of the instances of it being overly similar. Really, another planet-sized death machine.
Yeah, that can kill galaxies.
It's not called the Death Star, it's called the Star Killer.
Yeah.
They even
Star.
Star. Come up with anything. Call it like the Orb of Destruction.
Yes.
You know?
Wow, there you go. That's a good one.
Or the Planet of Screw You, Your Planet Has Exploded.
That's a little too long.
Or Super Galactic Hyper Beam of Death and Turmoil.
Maybe drop Turmoil.
The point is, don't call it Star Killer, though.
Yeah, there could have been a better name for it.
That was an Easter egg, though, to be honest.
Yeah, right. Because that was Luke Skywalker's original name in Lucas's first draft.
Yeah.
It's Star Killer.
Yes. It was also the name of one of the characters in a Star Wars video game.
Yes, it was.
So, yeah. So there's a lot of Easter eggs peppered in there. But I think we're both in agreement. We both agree with J.J. Abrams. In what he says, that it was a wildly intentional thing that we go backwards in some ways to go forwards.
Yeah, and I think if you're complaining that episode 7 is too much like episode 4, I think you might want to take a step back, find the child within you, and go back and watch that movie. Enjoy it, you know, as a child seeing A New Hope for the first time. Remember that feeling.
And you know what? I think that's how you should approach all movies, really. Because, like, I was in the theater, and that music starts, and I'm like, I'm, like, freaking out like a little kid. I'm like, yeah, you know, and you know, I don't want to give away any parts of the movie, but, you know, near the end, where it's like you have the final scene, I'm getting chills, and I'm like, oh, you know, I can barely contain my excitement.
Yep.
You know, and just let that inner child take over, you know?
Yeah.
Just look at it with wonder like you're supposed to with all movies. When you think about movies, like you're being transported to another world, shut up, bury that critic, and just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. Enjoy the movie from a child's point of view, and you'll really love episode 7.
Yeah.
I think, at least. I don't know. My two cents.
But you know what? That's not to say that only children can enjoy it, though.
No, but that sense of wonderment and that sense of discovering something new will really enhance your watch of episode 7, I think.
Agreed.
But there you go.
Wonderfully put, Rich.
Thank you. Well, guess what? I'm about to ruin any sort of high esteem you had for me on that.
Because
coming up next, we'll have the non-fortune cookie odd news. I will be reading ridiculous stories that actually happen in the world.
I'll be making a fool of myself reacting to that.
Yep. So, don't go anywhere. The odd news, the non-fortune cookie odd news, still to come next. Don't go anywhere. This is the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We'll be right back.
The Crispy Noodle Podcast. Did you hear this?
Michigan is making sure that your beer pint at the bar cannot be 16 ounces or fewer.
Do you have like an official beer inspector standing there?
Yeah, you get the Michigan beer thing.
The Michigan beer thing. The MBT.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir. We're with the MBT. Is there 16 ounces in there? I'm sorry, sir. I'm reading 15.6 ounces. I'm going to have to take you in. So.
On the streets of Michigan, the Michigan beer thing is out and about to make sure you get the right beer.
Not the right beer, the right amount of beer.
Excuse me, right amount of beer. I'm drunk right now.
I'm drunk right now. It's all part of the business with the MBT.
Check out thecrispynoodle.com.
Yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. A paradise, if you will.
This is a great song. Coldplay, right?
Yep, Coldplay. I've been cranking up the Coldplay recently because I'm looking forward to their halftime performance at the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, they're going to be nice. Uh-huh. That's going to be good.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that Super Bowl. I'm looking forward to the halftime show.
I can't wait. Playoff football, you can't beat it.
Yeah, so.
What are we talking about sports again?
Yeah, we usually just leave that in the sports sampler, but yeah. It's been bleeding its way throughout the entirety of the show.
Yeah.
But,
That's right, because we had the Sixers thing in the entertainment entree. Yeah.
Right. But, I promise you, as of, right now, all the sports, stories come to an end. All the entertainment stories have come to an end. Because right now, we're moving fully into our third and last part of the show. Folks, it's time for the absolutely true, absolutely wild, the crazy, the non-fortune cookie-odd news.
We've been talking about cool and its ramifications and how it applies to the hip scene. But maybe you could give us some examples now of the opposite of cool, uncool. Just exactly what is uncool?
My nipples look like milk duds.
Holy shnikes.
It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
How you doing? Me? I'm doing great.
Mandata Basata, I don't make this stuff up.
I've seen the celery dance across the baseball fields.
You had me at meat tornado.
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Okay. What does that mean?
And now, it's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
So, sit back, get everything you need to get from the kitchen. Be sure and empty the bladders, go to the bathroom, because you're in for a hell of a ride.
Woo, yeah! Time for some odd news. And, of course, to start off the odd news segment,
I completely broke that.
Our associate producer just made and is eating a sandwich. Just to start off the he was dancing while he was making and eating a sandwich.
We record late at night, folks. So we're sitting here in the dining room, just to paint you a picture, and my brother's standing in the other room making a sandwich. He's just gyrating wildly while eating this sandwich. I'm just watching him like, what is he doing? Mind you, it's like in the middle of the night, just eating a sandwich, gyrating in the middle of the kitchen.
Can you discipline him?
Oh, kinky.
Yep, so there you go. Our first odd news story.
That is an odd news story.
Associate producer is gyrating while making a ham sandwich while we're recording the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
He's just standing there just eating the sandwich, watching us like, why are you guys doing this to me?
All right, well, let's launch into non-fortune cookie odd news.
Yeah, let's get down to business. For those of you that don't know anything about this segment, this is the non-fortune cookie odd news. In this segment, Rich researches the news, he reads the news, and I react to the news. I've never heard or seen these stories before. Rich prints them out. He hides them from me, keeps them secret and safe so that I don't see them, so that my reactions are my gut reactions, my genuine reactions. I don't know what's about to happen. You guys don't know what's about to happen. And Rich doesn't even know what's about to happen because these stories always take us down wacky and wild paths. And that's what I love most about them. So let's kick this baby off. What do we got in the first story?
Let's do some smuggling in our first... Smuggling in the first story here. Not from Mexico, but actually from Canada.
Okay. I mean, yeah, you can smuggle things from Canada. Drugs are cheaper in Canada.
Yep.
They had a whole Simpsons episode where they went to Canada and they stole a whole bunch of drugs. It's actually a very funny episode where they fly a giant wooden plane. It's crazy. Well, go check that one out. Is that what they were smuggling?
Well, this one might be weirder.
Okay.
A Canadian man who was covered in winter camouflage tried to sneak into Vermont while pulling nearly 200 pounds of Xanax on a sled.
On a sled?
Yeah.
And where was this? What part of the border was this?
Canada going into Vermont.
Canada going into Vermont. Okay, so I guess it's snowy there.
Yep.
And I guess you could take a sled full of drugs. Yeah. Was this like one of those Iditarod like dog sled teams? Or they got like 12 dogs and like, yah, yah, mush. Please say yes. Even if it's not true, just say yes.
The U.S. District Court released documents that revealed that 21-year-old Cedric Bugeaud-Morin of Quebec, Canada, was arrested by U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents after he tripped a sensor along railroad tracks that led into Vermont. Border agents wrote in the arrest report that, quote, agents observed a single adult male dressed in white camouflage clothing walking along the railroad tracks and pulling a sled behind him. No, it was just him.
It was just him pulling
the sled.
It's just
him pulling the sled.
So he is the dog.
He is the dog, yeah.
And the drugs are whipping him. Is this in a secluded area? I assume he's traveling where there's not many towns.
Yeah, just a railroad.
How far has he been walking with just himself dragging that stupid sled? If he has a sled, that to me indicates he's going through snowy wooded areas. Because you don't drag a sled down streets, do you?
No.
So this lunatic is walking through the woods with a sled filled with Xanax. This is insane. And he's just by himself.
Yep.
He's just like a little kid taking a sled out to play, but the sled is filled with drugs. That's great.
The sled contained a large duffel bag that was wrapped also in white camouflage. The suspect...
Was the sled painted camouflage?
Does not say here.
So what's the point then?
The suspect did not speak any English, but was identified with help from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. The bag contained 182 pounds of alprazolam, which is the anti-anxiety medication known as Xanax. The pills were separated into 300 vacuum-sealed bags.
Wow.
Customs officials estimated that the street value of all these drugs together were $1.6 million.
Wow, that's a lot
of money
right
there. Yeah, we're not talking about a couple of pills. We're talking some serious cash here.
$1.6 million, you said?
Yep.
Wow, that's a lot of money. Now, is that Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars?
U.S. dollars.
What's the conversion rate again? I don't really... See, that's the problem with being an international criminal. You have all these exchange rates. That's why if I were to be a criminal, I would just operate in the United States. It's just easier, you know?
Sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
Now, you see, if that guy was an international criminal, you'd be like, oh, $5 ass, but what's that in euros? That's like a $6.2 ass. It doesn't work, Rich. It ruins the quote. Ruins the quote.
And then the other countries have like different coinage. And you got to mix the bills up. Oh, it's a mess.
In Canada, they have like $2 coins.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing, $2 coins? What's wrong with you people? They did get rid of the penny, though, which is smart.
Yep. They're ahead of us.
I know you
department.
Hate the penny.
I do. I hate the penny. Screw the penny. That needs to go away.
I'm just going to drop that one in there and let people mull on that one. I hate the penny. Back to the news.
I do. I hate the penny.
Go ahead, Rich. Go ahead.
First off, they cost 2 to 3 cents for every penny to make.
It's true.
Right there.
It's true.
Right there. That should be ass backwards logic. We should stop printing the penny right then and there.
Absolutely true.
All right. And secondly, if you see a penny on the ground, how often do you really pick up a penny?
Never.
Right.
I never pick it up. I don't pick up anything less than like a dime.
So there you go. All right.
Also, apparently.
I'm just going to put it out there.
Okay. All right. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Tweet at me at Rich Liebig if you want to know more information about why we should get rid of the
Hashtag
penny.
Hashtag penny hate.
Yeah. I will provide the I will provide plenty of penny hate. There you go.
He has sources to back up his.
I do.
His claims. It's amazing.
I do. I did a college research project on it. I will give you all the research that you want on that. But to go back to the story, this guy's facing 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine for being in possession of a controlled substance with the intent to distribute over country lines. Oh, I guess that's
wow.
More.
Yeah,
I guess because you're dealing with both Canada and U.S. regulations.
Yeah, so I guess it would be more severe.
Yeah, so pretty severe. Yeah, sound like a funny story, but this guy's going to be facing 5 years in prison.
See, again, don't be an international criminal.
Yeah.
And you don't think of Canada and the U.S. as international, right?
It
because
is.
It's like people are like,
countries.
Oh, Canada, that's U.S.'s hat. But it's not. It's another country.
It's U.S.'s hat.
I have relatives in Canada.
You're just a hat.
You guys are just hats, man. No, Canada's great there. I love Canada. I actually do. I love their policy on pennies.
That's good.
And maple syrup. Go ahead, Rich.
Boy, you can't beat that. No,
can't beat that combination, though.
Thank you. Thank you, Canada. All right, let's get to our next story here. You know, actually, what? Bruno was making food. This next story is about some food.
Okay.
A pot of chili was at the center of an argument that boiled over into an attack on Friday morning. A 26-year-old man allegedly attacked his 35-year-old wife and a 30-year-old male family acquaintance around 5 o'clock in the morning.
Why do you have chili at 5 o'clock in the morning?
Man, you need
Were
to
you
have...
cooking it, or was it left over? Were you just starting the chili? These are the questions that need to be answered. Go ahead. 5 o'clock in the morning, chili.
The officer on call, Jennifer Moreno, said that, quote, there was a pot of chili on the stove, and the male victim stirred it. The suspect did not want the person stirring the chili. How dare you?
That's insane. So
that's when the suspect got angry and decided to bite and stab the male family acquaintance.
I like how it's just male family acquaintance. It's like at the end of movies, the credits where it's like police officer one. He doesn't even have a name.
You know.
Male family acquaintance. Why are you stabbing somebody over chili, though? You did say that this was 5 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Or because you said it, and then I'm like, did I imagine that? Five in the morning.
5 in the morning.
5 in the morning. So the chili is on the stove.
And yeah, it's cooking.
So, I mean, chili is quite involved.
Yeah.
You got a lot of different ingredients to go in there. It's a lot of prep time.
Yeah.
That means that they woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to make chili.
These people couldn't go to sleep.
It's a husband, a wife, and a random friend.
Yeah.
Making chili at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then the one gets stabbed.
Yep, because he stirred the chili.
That's how you start your day off right. With chili and a stabbing.
Chili and a stabbing.
Chili. It's like Netflix and chill, except much more violent.
The suspect was unhappy about the man stirring his chili. This sounds like some sort of weird innuendo. You know?
Yeah, he stirred my chili.
He stirred that chili.
I would understand if he, like, stirred his wife's chili, but...
Yeah, that's definitely not...
He put the spoon in the chili. I don't like that.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
The male victim suffered non-life-threatening bite and stab wounds to his thigh. He was transported to the Mount Sinai Grace Hospital in temporary...
Bit him in the thigh?
Yeah.
That's an awkward place to bite somebody.
Yeah, that's right.
What is going on in this house? You're making chili at 5 a.m. with your wife and a male family acquaintance, i.e. they were having a threesome and it went wrong because he ended up getting bit in the thigh.
Yeah.
Come on. 2 and 2 is 4, and that was a threesome with chili gone wrong. Is there any other explanation, Rich?
Detective Michael Costanzo, right?
I'm on the case. But no, give me another explanation. What? If anybody can give me a better explanation than chili threesome, hashtag chili threesome, tweet me.
These guys are chili enthusiasts.
Chili enthusiasts?
They really love their chili.
Okay.
The suspect was placed under arrest following the attack. Nobody is still in the hospital as of this reporting of the news article. So that's good. Everyone recovered.
Well, thank God for that.
All right.
Oh, my God. I don't know how you're going to top Chili Threesome right there.
Yeah. Well, let's continue the food.
Okay. Yeah. We like food stories. Yeah.
Bruno ran off. He made his little sandwich and didn't offer anything to us. So now we're all hungry.
Bastard.
And I've got more food stories here.
Great.
Let's go to Indiana.
You're gonna starve now.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Let's go to this one in Indiana. Police in Indiana said that a man paid for his McDonald's food by accidentally handing a bag of heroin instead of money over to the drive-thru worker.
You don't get these two things confused.
You shouldn't.
Like, how are you like, this doesn't look like money? that wasn't a mistake. You said accidentally, right?
Yeah.
No, there was a drug deal gone wrong. There's a Chili Threesome gone wrong, and there's a drug deal gone wrong. Odd news stories can usually be broken down to somebody messed up horribly in something illegal that they were trying to do. So this guy was trying to make a drug deal, got caught, and said, I didn't realize my money had turned into heroin. I don't know how you... Anyway, go ahead.
The LaPorte City Police report of the incident said that an employee at the McDonald's took money from a male driver who appeared intoxicated Monday night, and she sorted the bills to discover that there was a green plastic baggie containing, quote, a rock-like substance.
Oh, that's more understandable than him just handing a bag of drugs over.
Police said that the substance was heroin, and testing later confirmed that it was. LaPorte Metro Operations Coordinator Holon Williams said that police are reviewing surveillance footage from the fast food restaurant because after the man realized that he threw the plastic baggie with the bills to the drive-thru worker, he sped away. The man is still on the loose. So somewhere in Indiana, there is a McDonald's patron that lost his heroin.
Oh, man. I feel so bad for him. What's he going to do with this? What's he going to do without his heroin?
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Another food story.
Did he get his food, though?
I guess he didn't because he was in. I guess when he realized he gave up the heroin, he sped away. I guess
he just left without his food.
So, yes. So he
lost his heroin and his food.
Yep. In Indiana, watch out. There's a hungry drug dealer.
There's a hungry drug dealer
on the loose.
Yeah, so if you're buying drugs and the guy says, oh, man, I'm really hungry, that's the guy. Call the police. They're looking for him.
If he also spills his drugs on his bills, it's also him, too.
Well, it wasn't spilled in the bills. It was in a bag, like, tucked
in his money.
Do people not carry wallets?
I guess not.
Did he just have a wad of cash in his pocket? He just pulls out a ball of crumpled bills. He's like, here, count this. Like, did he bother going through it? Like, none of this makes sense to me. When you go to pay for something, you hand the person the amount of money that's required.
You're supposed to.
I mean, have you ever just grabbed a bunch, like a handful of bills and just tossed it at somebody?
No, I'm not that wealthy.
You're not that wealthy? No, I'm not either.
People do that.
Do they?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Have you witnessed rich people do that? Just crumple
sure,
up bills?
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to have money where I am in a position to not give a damn so much that I can just throw wads of cash at people and just walk away and be comfortable with it. That's success right there. That's the American dream.
Just like Wolf of Wall Street.
I never saw it.
Oh, you got to see that. Leonardo DiCaprio has so much money that he just like... He throws money out of his yacht, and he doesn't care.
Wow. That's money right there.
Yep. They call it FU money.
FU money.
Yeah.
I want to have FU money. That sounds awesome. All right.
Well, let's go to our next story here. More food.
Another food story?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We're all hungry.
There's a lot of
Bruno's fault. He made the sandwich.
He brought this on us.
Yeah. The odd news is hungry, we're hungry.
He made two sandwiches and didn't give us any of it.
Well, here you go. Here's another story.
Okay.
It must have been quite the scene for customers and employees of the Cobb County Waffle House.
Oh, God. Every time there's a Waffle House story, you know it's going to be interesting.
After allegedly punching a woman in the face and breaking her nose, a Marietta woman, a Marietta, Marietta, Georgia woman threw multiple Waffle House platters at people inside the diner Friday night. Jennifer Mary Nicholson damaged a window when she hit it with a platter and also threw one at a Cobb police officer.
Why would you target the police officer?
No, I'm gonna f***ing kill you, motherfucker, old style.
Also, during this little rampage, she also tore her clothes off.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
They were obstructing her from getting that full, like, throwing motion, you know? The clothes were restricting her. So she just had to take them off. I think that's interesting that she was able, to stop in the middle of this rampage and strip down.
Yeah.
And then pick up where she left off. I think that's very commendable.
The warrant states, quote, "The accused, Miss Nicholson, stripped off all of her clothes in the Waffle House, during a, quote, suspected excited delirium state."
What? Wow. What was that?
Boy, we're really...
really? What? Yeah, we're an really... excited, an unexpected, excited...
A, quote, suspected excited delirium state. Really pulling out the thesaurus here.
The police officer's like, well, I got to practice my big words. Let's see. Suspected, excited. Wait, where is this from?
Georgia.
Okay, good. I'm in the South End. Suspected, excited,
wow, really lost.
Delirium state. Well, because I didn't want to do a Southern accent and have it be from, like, Canada or something. Yeah, there's no Waffle House in Canada. Come on.
Nicholson also resisted being arrested in the scuffle, scratching a police officer across the chin, and another police officer punched in the face enough to draw blood.
Jeez.
Wow.
She's, well, I know what they mean by suspected excited delirium state.
Yeah.
I think you could sum that up by saying crazy.
Yeah.
I think that's another word for it.
She was finally taken down by three police officers. She was then arrested, charged with aggravated battery and criminal damage to property, simple assault, obstruction, and public indecency. So
yeah,
she'll get the book with all those charges. But wow, she was really pissed off.
Yeah, pissed off enough to break some stuff.
Yeah, boy,
take her clothes off.
She punched a woman. First,
punched a woman. That's
start
right.
Start off punching a woman, then throwing a whole bunch of Waffle House platters at people.
Then she took off her clothes.
Then taking off her clothes.
Threw some more platters.
Threw more platters. And then
punched the cops. What a day.
That's a busy day, man.
When did that happen? Like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, probably?
Yeah, it had to be early. I don't think Waffle House, I don't know, they might be open late. I don't know.
I have no, I've never been to a Waffle House. I couldn't tell you.
Well,
that's
there
insane,
you go.
Though. I love, yeah. Why did she punch the woman to start off with? It doesn't mention that at all.
No,
does
it doesn't
it?
Mention why she got mad. No.
I just picture her just walking up and punching someone right in the face as soon as she walks in the building.
Just went berserk.
No, she didn't go berserk. She went suspected excited delirium state.
Yes, very important. Suspected excited delirium state.
Yeah. I think it has a better ring than crazy or berserk. Suspected excited delirium state.
That should be your Georgia tagline, you know, because we have Florida, you know, yeah. They're crazy.
It's Georgia, and we're all suspected excited delirium state.
Yeah, yeah, it's too many words.
It's too many words. I need a new jingle.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can come up one. I can't come up with anything. Georgia, the suspected excited delirium state. Brought to you by Georgia.
Wait, Georgia is also brought to you by Georgia?
Featuring Georgia.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm in a suspected excited delirium state right now, okay? Mm-hmm. It's late and all these food stories are making me hungry and I'm losing my mind a little bit.
All right, I got another story here for you. We're going to South Carolina in this one.
Okay.
A woman in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina is facing various charges after police said that when she was caught trying to shoplift from Walmart, she bit the finger off a Walmart employee.
Not a finger.
Yep.
Well, yeah, not a finger.
Not a finger.
Yeah, man, biting fingers off. Why not?
Oh, my God. How angry do you have to be to bite a finger off? That's awful.
Not a finger.
Like, a finger is, they're pretty solid, wouldn't you say?
Carolyn Wright was arrested early Sunday morning after loss prevention officers saw her swipe numerous items, including condoms, lube, and panties.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
She had something planned for that night, didn't she?
I know it's something to do with sex.
Probably, yes.
Probably, yep.
Maybe, although you don't know. You don't know. This is South Carolina, right? This is still the South. We don't know. It could be for anything.
When two employees attempted to stop her from leaving the store, Wright allegedly punched one of them in the head and then took to the other one and bit off a portion of the guy's finger.
Not a finger!
That really sucks. That guy's just doing his job and bam, gets his finger bitten off.
Not a finger!
A woman who witnessed the fight told police she called 911, but Wright then grabbed her phone. The woman said Wright grabbed her by the hair and only let go when the victim punched her in the face.
Wow.
Yeah. Wright then ran out of the Walmart to a waiting vehicle. Wow. So I guess she kind of planned this?
I mean, up until the point where she had to bite a dude's finger off, probably. Yeah. I think that people usually don't plan that in. All right, now this is the point in the plan where we have to bite people's fingers off.
Not a finger!
You usually don't see that part in the heist movies, do you?
No.
Leaving out a key step there, I think.
You also don't see this part. The driver was about to leave the parking lot, but then someone was standing in front of the car, and the driver did not choose to run over them.
Well, you don't want to add homicide to the list of charges, Rich.
Yeah, but I mean, you're already an accomplice in a theft here.
Theft, not murder.
Well, not maybe,
big difference.
No, you're, big go, difference. Go like 5 miles per hour, like a nudge.
Just nudge him out of the way. You know? Move. Get out of the way. You know? Just beeping.
It's like a nudge.
Bumping into his knees.
Yeah. Well,
just nudge him out of the way with your car.
Well, because the, quote, getaway driver didn't move, Wright was caught right then, right there.
She needs a better getaway driver.
Wright was charged with aggravated assault and shoplifting. EMS responders said that they were unable to reattach the finger.
Oh. Not a finger!
Yeah, so...
Not a finger!
This poor Walmart employee.
That's actually kind of sad. Yeah. That person had to lose a finger. Did they say which finger?
No, it doesn't say which finger.
I hope it's not an important finger.
I hope not either.
Like, you can Walmart, do with it. You Walmart, can do without the pinky, I think.
Walmart is not worth losing your finger over.
No, definitely not. No, Target, maybe.
Target.
No, Target, that's right. Up here in the north, we call it Target.
All right, ready for our next batch of stories?
Yeah, let's do it.
I hope you are, because it's Florida story time.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
And I've got two Florida stories here.
Okay.
And it's another crazy woman. Boy, I didn't realize this.
Bitches be crazy, yo.
Yeah, man, what is going on? Well, this one's a Florida woman. A Florida woman went crazy at a trailer park.
I don't know why. It's
yeah,
just,
no, you know,
it's like almost expected. You know?
A woman is accused of exposing her breasts and throwing a barbecue pit around a trailer park. She got locked up after an intoxicating situation, according to sheriff office records.
What's an intoxicating situation? What is that?
Boy, yeah.
I mean, people get drunk, people drink, but what
intoxicating situation?
Yeah, I was in an intoxicating situation. That doesn't make, okay, whatever. And also, it never ceases to amaze me that when people get angry, the clothes come off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mad, boom, clothes are off. I never understand why. Is it like animal instinct? We need to revert back to our, like, animal, like, you know, primal urges and just, like, rip all of our clothes off? I don't know.
Deputies identified the suspect as 31-year-old Christine Taylor, who was causing a disturbance. Taylor was drinking all night, and the victim on the scene said that, quote, she was trying to, quote, fight people in the trailer park by saying, "What up, bro?"
Okay.
Sure, yeah, why not?
No, I'm gonna f***ing kill you, motherfucker, old style.
I love these testimonies. It's just like, she's saying, what up, bro?
She then threatened to cut people with a broken beer bottle.
Yikes.
Then Taylor got naked, lifted up her shirt, and unveiled her breasts.
All right.
To everyone in the trailer park. Sure.
So far, it sounds like a decent evening.
Yeah. It's a pleasant evening.
Got
up
booze,
until this point.
Barbecue, boobs. I mean, fights. Yeah. Where does it all go wrong, though, Rich?
Well, I think this is the part. I think this is the sad part.
Okay.
Taylor then went to another neighbor's trailer outside and toppled over their barbecue grill, grabbed the meat, and threw sausages and pork chops at people.
Sausages!
As she screams that.
Yeah.
Sausages! No sausages. No sausages. No sausages. Sausages!
I just picture this, like, topless woman, just breasts flapping in the wind, just throwing around sausages, toppling over barbecues.
No sausages. No sausages. No sausages. Sausages!
Sausages! The people in the trailer are like, Bobby, don't go outside. There's a naked lady throwing around sausages.
Yeah.
I don't know what accent that was that I just did.
The owner of the sausages and pork chops.
The owner of the sausages. I don't know why that struck me as funny.
Sausages!
The owner of the sausages and pork chops confirmed to deputies that it was indeed 31-year-old Christine Taylor. She was then arrested on disorderly conduct charges.
And the saddest part of that story, though, is that was some, like, prime meat that just went to waste there.
No sausages. No sausages. No sausages. Sausages!
That's what it was. She's a fan of the show.
She knows and the so Crispy Noodle Podcast.
She saw the sausages, and she was like, no sausages, and just picked them up and threw them off the grill. That's what it was.
I have to listen to one of the greatest men of our era, Frank Costanzo. His words of encouragement have lifted me to take action.
Make it sound like he's going to be like a prophet in the future. Yeah. The prophet of the...
Frank Costanzo.
Frank Costanzo. The No Sausage Clan.
Yes.
No's, and then just chanting, no sausages.
No
sausages.
No sausages.
No sausages. No sausages. No sausages. Sausages!
A yep. Reading from the Book of Frank. First letter to the sausages. And he doth said to them, no sausages.
End of story.
May the pork be with you. And also with your barbecue. That's it. That's the entire reading.
There you go. So, yeah, she's arrested on a disorderly conduct charge. All right, I got one more story, one more Florida story to end the odd news for this week.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
Yep, this guy's a little bit crazy. 19-year-old student Joshua Stanley was arrested by Jacksonville Sheriff's Office after he allegedly started a fire, stole, and then drive through the front of a 7-Eleven store, all in a quest to, quote, purify Jacksonville.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay. Like, save them from sin? Like, purify them?
Yeah, I guess so.
Why? Why drive through the 7-Eleven? Like, is that the source of all evil in Jacksonville? Is that one 7-Eleven?
Let's start off with the beginning of his night.
Yes, please.
The police report states that at midnight, a black male that was later identified as Joshua Stanley entered a convenience store and began throwing rocks inside the store.
Okay.
The clerk at the store asked him to stop and said that he would have to leave if he didn't purchase anything. The suspect then screamed at the clerk, money is evil,
okay,
and then stole two bottles of lighter fluid off a display shelf.
Uh-oh.
And a lighter and ran off. He then went outside without paying and fled the scene in his SUV.
Money is evil, but I have a gigantic SUV.
Yeah.
But money is evil. What is that you're driving? Is that a Lexus? Oh, yes it is, but money's evil.
Surveillance footage then showed Stanley arriving in his SUV and then standing in front of a tree at a McDonald's.
He seems to be going to like all like the, said like a convenience store, then McDonald's. He ends up at a 7-Eleven eventually.
Yep.
He's like targeting a specific type of establishment.
Well, at this McDonald's in front of the tree that was at this McDonald's, he waved the white bottle all over the tree. The video then showed what appeared to be an object being lit on fire and Stanley throwing it to the ground, engulfing the lighter fluid with the tree. And then he threw the bottle into the second bottle. That's why. I was like, what's going on? So he took the first – all right. Took the first bottle, sprayed it all over the tree.
Right.
Lit it on fire, then took the second bottle and just threw that into the fire.
Sure, why not?
The police report says that he then admired his work. Well, exited the scene.
Well, of course you're going to admire your work. Come on. I mean, really, you got to stop and admire your handiwork every once in a while. You should be proud with your accomplishments. It's a lesson for all the kids listening.
I forgot. There's two bottles of lighter fluid.
Two bottles of lighter
fluid. Silly me.
One just wasn't going to cut it.
Yeah, I'm obviously not experienced in this.
No, you're not. You're not an experienced arson, no.
You need at least two bottles.
That's if you want a really good fire,
one that you can admire.
Yes.
All right. So after he was done with the random tree burning,
did nobody try to stop him or say anything?
I guess midnight.
Oh, it is midnight.
Yeah. So maybe the McDonald's was closed.
Maybe
some McDonald's close at 10.
That's true. They're insane. Why would they do that? But anyway, okay.
Well, after he was done with this tree at a McDonald's, he then entered a 7-Eleven store and began to take miscellaneous items, including phone chargers, lighters, and roll change.
Why go for the change? Why not the bills?
Yeah.
This guy's just a really bad criminal.
The suspect was approached by a witness. The witness said, "What are you doing?" The suspect turned to her and immediately asked, "Do you believe in God?" The witness said the suspect also then talk to her about Jesus, God, and Satan.
I can't imagine anything creepier than talking to a dude stealing rolled change about God at midnight in a 7-Eleven.
The witness said that the suspect seemed to be mentally unstable.
Really?
Yep. And said that the 7-Eleven store was, quote, the spawn of Satan.
Oh, so it was?
Yes.
It was the source of all evil in Jacksonville.
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, my God. He's like one of God's archangels coming to save the day.
And then said that I'm going to burn the store down.
Okay.
But instead of burning the store down, Stanley got in his SUV and drove towards the front of the 7-Eleven, crashing right through the front of the store.
I called an audible. He's like, I'm going to burn it down. No, I think I'm just going to crash this car into it.
Oh, God's sending me an audible. Change of plans.
The coach is changing the play. God's just standing with a clipboard with S8 written on the back of it.
How many timeouts do I have left? Oh, crap. Just crash your car. How many plays have I run so far?
At the press conference afterwards, like, well, I ran 80 plays, so it was a pretty good rapture for me.
Good news, everyone.
Oh, if anybody doesn't get the reference, God is Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly is God. Or Satan. I'm not sure yet.
Maybe it's Satan.
Maybe it is Satan, yeah.
Well, at that point, cops finally showed up to the scene. He was under arrest and charged with a felony count of criminal mischief, 2 counts of misdemeanor criminal mischief, 2 counts of misdemeanor petite theft.
Oh, my gosh.
And 1 count of reckless driving.
That's a lot of charges.
Yeah, but, you know, he hit 3 different stores here.
I have a legitimate question. Is that how you destroy evil, by crashing an SUV into it?
That's the audible.
Is that like, if you can't get a priest to perform an exorcism? I miss that part in religion class in high school where they're like, you can eradicate evil by crashing a large vehicle into it.
And there you go. That's what I have for you in the non-fortune cookie odd news for this week. But before we officially wrap everything up on this episode, let's go over what we've learned tonight. Folks, what have we learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast?
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
All right, Mike, what have you learned on this episode?
Well, I'll tell you what I didn't learn. I didn't find out whether Chip Kelly was God or Satan.
Yeah.
It's one of those mysteries that's left up in the air, you know?
Maybe the Antichrist? I don't know.
Something like that. I think he's somewhere on that spectrum between God and Satan.
Yeah.
You're just like, yeah, of course.
Sure, I don't know.
But I did learn something.
At least he doesn't call plays out of the shotgun anymore for the Eagles.
Yes, that's the only thing that I care about.
Yeah.
I did learn something else, though. I learned that you can kill evil by crashing an SUV into that. That is the official Catholic Church-sanctioned method of destroying evil.
Make sure it's blessed.
What, the SUV?
Yeah, the SUV itself has to be blessed.
Slap a cross on it. You should be good.
Okay.
Speaking of evil, though, I learned that the source of all evil is a 7-Eleven in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, yep. Stop that 7-Eleven.
I didn't know that it was the gateway to hell.
Right there.
Right there. It was right there under our noses the whole time.
It's hidden behind the Slurpee machine.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I like it. Speaking of weird religious things, I also learned that my dad will have a cult following regarding his teachings on sausage.
Yep. Yep. The Father Costanzo.
Look for that in the near future in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, probably.
Yep.
But speaking of sausages, though, we learned that our fans all over the U.S. are destroying sausages as a form of solidarity with the podcast.
That's a shame, though. I like sausages.
I like sausages, too.
Yeah.
So this is an official message to everybody out there. Stop destroying sausages, okay?
Yeah, come on.
Be cool. Be cool, all right?
Yeah.
I did learn, though, that it's not cool if somebody's standing in front of your car when you're trying to make a getaway. If that's the case, just nudge them a little bit.
Yeah, just nudge.
You know, just bust his kneecaps with the front bumper of your car. It's fine. He'll be fine.
Just a small nudge.
Just a small nudge, just to tip him over.
Ooh.
That's why you just lean out the window, move!
Yeah, come on.
Oh, you know what? If you do that, though, somebody might write in the police report that you are suspected, that you have suspected excited delirium state.
Oh, boy. That's definitely one above panic.
Definitely, that's just one above panic. I really want to know what your full scale is. It's like panic, suspected excited delirium state, and then I don't know what else comes after that.
Yep, I'll have to work on the spectrum.
You'll have to work on the spectrum, okay. Oh, boy. I also learned that chili threesomes are a thing. People have threesomes with chili at 5 o'clock in the morning and then bite each other's thighs when they get angry that they didn't stir the chili properly. Still a little confused about that story. I also learned that Rich hates pennies, that our associate producer loves to eat food and dance while we record in the middle of the night. And one thing I learned legitimately is that ATP stands for the Association of Tennis Professionals.
There you go.
That's like very rarely do I legitimately learn something. Those are the things that I legitimately learned today.
And there you go, folks. That's what we've learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Yes, sir.
I'm if I know what we did.
Woo! That was a crazy non-fortune cookie odd news to end this week's episode.
We're always crazy.
Yep.
That's why we like them.
I gotta admit, I'm actually pretty hungry. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Wawa, that's what you're gonna
do. Maybe stop by Wawa, but
there you go.
All those food stories, man, got to me.
I know.
And then your brother eating
the food stories. It's like he knew it was coming. Did you tell him you were gonna have a bunch of food stories?
No.
He's just standing there dancing, eating a sandwich. I'm like, really? You're gonna dance in front of us eating a sandwich?
Well, folks, this is the craziness that is the Crispy Noodle Podcast. This is what happens when we record at the Crispy Noodle headquarters, which is Mike's kitchen. So there you go.
Hey, there is food in the kitchen. So yeah.
If you want more information on the Crispy Noodle, including our wonderful studio, which is Mike's kitchen, check out the website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure to like us on Facebook, The Crispy Noodle, and follow us on Twitter, at The Crispy Noodle.
If you want to see The Crispy Noodle headquarters on full display, make sure to check out the YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's right.
Where we have some videos specifically.
You can see it right there.
An old Christmas video where you get to see the kitchen in all its glory.
Yeah.
So subscribe to the YouTube channel. But most importantly, subscribe to The Crispy Noodle podcast on iTunes, where you can get all of the latest episodes downloaded for free, straight to your computer, phone, or tablet. You can listen to us at home, on the go, at work, anytime, anywhere, anyhow. Just search for, download, and subscribe to The Crispy Noodle podcast on iTunes.
That's right. And we also have a SoundCloud page where we have all of the mini noodles, which are 2-minute promos of The Crispy Noodle podcast that you can easily share with friends and family and strangers and people who are
at your house for chili at 5 a.m.
Sure.
Naughty listeners.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was really creepy. I apologize. If you oddly want to get in contact with us individually on Twitter, maybe for a chili threesome. No, don't do that. I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo.
Just contact Mike Costanzo. I am on Twitter at Rich Liebig, RichLaebig. This is the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the Crispy Noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. That's going to do it for this week. We will see you guys next week.
See you guys
later.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
What's the deal with the podcast? What's going on? It's just crazy. It's wild. It's the Crispy Noodle 2016. Oh my gosh.